From Pacifica Network, this is Democracy Now! Breaking with Convention. War, Peace, and the Presidency. The Battle for New York.
Bill O'Reilly! Shut up! Bill O'Reilly! Shut up! Bill O'Reilly! Shut up!
Thousands of protesters take to the streets of New York to protest the Republican convention yet again. We'll take a look at some of the acts of protest. This at the headquarters of Fox News as demonstrators said, shut the Fox up. And we speak with longtime journalist Peter Stone, as well as New York Times columnist, a speech by Paul Krugman.
Bush said the earth was flat. The headlines on a lot of the mainstream media stories with the shape of the earth. Views differ.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now! Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency. The Battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman. In New York, nearly 1,000 people were arrested on Tuesday in widespread protests against the Republican National Convention. The protests organized by the A31 Action Coalition. That's August 31st. A decentralized umbrella group made up of scores of activist groups and affinity groups. Yesterday's arrest brought the number of arrests over the past 5 days to over 1,500. The groups participating in Tuesday's coordinated actions range from the War Resisters League to the Ruckus Society, from Code Pink to Direct Action to the San Francisco-based group Stop the War. Near Ground Zero, police preemptively arrested about 200 as they attempted to begin a peaceful procession to Madison Square Garden. Tuesday afternoon, protesters gathered outside Fox News to conduct a shut-up-a-thon. Others rallied at the Sotheby's auction house to defend the legacy of Johnny Cash. Many more demonstrators conducted unpermitted but nonviolent direct action protests that crippled the area around Madison Square Garden and delayed some delegates from attending the convention. Protests continue today. A symbolic unemployment line is being formed to stretch from Wall Street to Madison Square Garden. United for Peace and Justice has called for a rally outside Pier 57, where many of the protesters are being held. The group is describing the holding cell as, quote, Guantanamo on the Hudson. Meanwhile, Police Commissioner Ray Kelly has praised his officers, saying they've shown, quote, great restraint in the face of relentless provocation. Inside Madison Square Garden, the Austrian-born California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger called on fellow immigrants to support the Republican Party and President George Bush.
To my fellow immigrants listening tonight, I want you to know how welcome you are in this party. We Republicans admire your ambition. We encourage your dreams. We believe in your future. And one thing I learned about America is that if you work hard and if you play by the rules, this country is truly open to you. You can achieve anything. Everything I have, my career, my success, my family, I owe to America. In this country, it doesn't make any difference where you were born. It doesn't make any difference who your parents were. It doesn't make any difference if you're like me and couldn't even speak English until you were in your 20s.
California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger speaking Tuesday night at the Republican National Convention. Also last night, the president's daughters attempted to reach out to younger voters in a speech filled with jokes laced with pop culture references to Sex and the City and the hip-hop group Outkast. First Lady Laura Bush headlined the evening, praising how her husband is waging the war on terror. Tonight, Vice President Dick Cheney will be the keynote speaker. Sources close to Cheney say the vice president will likely lash out at Democratic nominee John Kerry. In Israel, the death toll in Yesterday's twin suicide bus bombings has risen to at least 14. Dozens have been injured. Following the attack, Prime Minister General Ariel Sharon announced Israel will accelerate the construction of the 400-mile separation wall being built in the West Bank. Sharon's office said, quote, "We will build the fence where it provides the best protection, not where the world decides." The United Nations and International Criminal Court have both determined the wall to be illegal under international law. In Moscow, 10 people have died in a suicide bomb attack on a city subway station. Meanwhile, in southern Russia, gunmen have taken at least 400 hostages, including 200 students at a school. The International Atomic Energy Agency is preparing to release a report that states UN inspectors have not uncovered definitive evidence that Iran has a secret nuclear weapons program. This, according to a report in the Washington Post, based on interviews with diplomats who've seen the study. The Bush administration has claimed Iran is 3 to 5 years away from building a nuclear bomb. In June, the U.S. shared intelligence tips with the UN Atomic Energy Agency, but the intelligence did not lead to any discoveries. The Washington Post reports the Justice Department will ask a federal judge in Detroit to dismiss the convictions of three men in a high-profile terrorism case last year, in part because federal prosecutors failed to share potentially exculpatory evidence with the defense. And a new Zogby poll shows many New Yorkers still question whether the U.S. government knew in advance of the September 11th attacks. According to the poll, 49% of New York City residents said some leaders, quote, knew in advance that attacks were planned on or around September 11th, 2001, and that they consciously failed to act. The poll was commissioned by the group 911truth.org. Democracy Now!, breaking with convention, war, peace, and the presidency, the battle for New York. You can also go to our website at democracynow.org, where we video and audio stream. We're doing 2 hours of broadcasting every day. If you can't hear it on the radio or on television, we're broadcasting on more than 240 radio and television stations in the largest public media collaboration in the country. We're broadcasting on Pacifica stations, NPR stations, public access TV stations, PBS station, and both TV networks on Dish Network Channel 9415 Free Speech TV, and on DirecTV, Link TV Channel 375. But you can go to all of our comprehensive coverage at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez.
Good day, and it's been quite a 24 hours here in New York City. Nearly 1,000 people arrested yesterday in protest against the Republican National Convention. Thousands of activists took to the streets to carry out a series of planned direct actions and civil disobedience at locations throughout the city. A total of 1,500 people have now been arrested since the protests began against President Bush 6 days ago. The demonstrations yesterday were organized by the A31 Action Coalition, a decentralized centralized umbrella group made up of scores of activist organizations and affinity groups.
The groups participating in Tuesday's coordinated actions range from the War Resisters League to the Ruckus Society, Code Pink, to the San Francisco-based Stop the War. One of Tuesday's main events was the Fox News Shut-Up-a-thon, where members of Code Pink and others gathered in front of Fox's corporate headquarters in Midtown Manhattan. Filmmaker Robert Greenwald was passing by in the DCTV van that had big posters that said Out Fox, the name of Robert Greenwald's film, Out Foxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism. The crowd swelled to thousands. Greenwald's film accuses Fox News Channel of tailoring its coverage to back President Bush. We spoke with Robert Greenwald amongst the protesters.
I'm here to join his incredible folks from Code Pink who organized this and join up in asking O'Reilly and Fox to shut up.
And what's this bus you just got off of?
The bus has a loop of O'Reilly telling everyone, first saying that he never said shut up but once, and then playing his shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, which to this day he denies saying, but we have it right here.
Paula Evans, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Bill, if you are so concerned about public figures being bad role models for children, please stop rudely interrupting your guests and telling them to shut up. Well, the shut up line has happened only once in 6 years, Ms. Evans.
Well, you know, I think that asking a student to stay in the closet in order to go to school is a lot like asking an African-American student.
Want to know what I was doing?
Shut up.
Please don't tell me to shut up.
As respect, why did you have to tell him you were an atheist if you didn't have any trouble reading the oath? Why didn't you just shut up? What Jimmy Carter should do is privately give Mr. Bush his opinion and shut up publicly. That would be best for the country.
And it is our duty as loyal Americans to shut up once the fighting begins.
Once the war against Saddam begins, we expect every American to support our military, and if they can't do that, to shut up.
All he's got in 6.5 years is that I misspoke, that I labeled a Polk Award a Peabody. He writes it in his book. He tries to make me out
No. That's
shut up.
No,
you had your 35 minutes. Shut up.
We're waiting
up
for him to come down and join us, but so far he hasn't taken us up on his invitation.
You invited him down?
Always. No, we want O'Reilly at all. Yes, we did invite him down, but like all bullies, he's not shown up. He prefers to stay up there where he's safe and yell and cut off people's microphones.
Have you ever been up there interviewed?
No, I've not been. But we're expecting after the demonstration today that Fox News will go out of business and announce they realize that it's been a mistake and they shouldn't be polluting the airwaves.
What kind of reaction have you gotten to Outfoxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism, your film?
We've gotten, I think it's an amazing reaction, not that the film, but the fact that we've gotten this very strong reaction because people care so much about this issue, the issue of media, the issue of Fox News, and the fact that it's not a news organization. And I've been shocked at, it's in the movie theaters where we broke the house record at the Quad. We've sold over 150,000 DVDs. It was number one on Amazon. And that's because people really care about the media. The media is trying to convince us they don't care. But the truth is people care passionately about this. And as Bob McChesney says, until we change media, we're never going to get the kind of social justice we would like in our society.
Can you talk about some of the things you found, some of the examples? You talk about the one series of shut-ups of Bill O'Reilly that you've saved, though he denied that he tells people to shut up except once.
Right. I mean, the wonderful thing about O'Reilly is he denies it, and then you show the clips, and there he's saying it. We essentially found four things in Outfoxed which prove the case, not that it's conservative, but that it's Republican partisan. And there's a difference. Conservative, you know, on budget deficits and prudent foreign policy. They don't do any of that if it goes against Bush. And what we found through four ways was we have the memo, the daily memos in which they instruct people not, you know, what stories to cover, but how to cover stories politically. We have 9 former members of Fox News who went public for the first time, and they talk about receiving specific political instruction. They're not complaining about what they were paid or the food. We have the great study by Fair of the Brit Hume Show. 25 weeks, they analyze all the guests, 80% Republican, 20% Democrat. And then we have hundreds, thousands of clips from Fox News, which are evident, which has never been done before either, of evidence of their consistent support and partisan line, the Republican Party.
What responsibility do they have?
Well, that's the question. You know, it's there's legal and there's moral. Legally, there does, because there's no equal time access anymore, there doesn't seem to be anything that can be done, except Altnet has the lawsuit against the trademark. Fox is trying to trademark Fair and Balance. Altnet is heading the, Don Hazen, who's here.
Don Hazen, can you come over here and join Robert Greenwald?
Talk about the lawsuit.
We're just learning about a lawsuit that Altnet has brought about against this company. Let's take a look. We're looking at the news ticker of Fox News right now. Violence afoot. Plainclothes detective attacked near MSG last night, still in serious condition. As people shout here, shut the Fox up. Don Hazen, what's the lawsuit?
It's actually a legal challenge in patent and trademark court, claiming that Fair and Balanced as a trademark is misdescriptive and generic, and that Fox should not have it. So it's a legal process, just like court, and we're in discovery, and we're trying to force it. Right now, Fox is a monopoly on the words Fair and Balanced. They've had them for 5 years, and 2 weeks before they were going to have it forever, we intervened, and we challenged them in this special court.
Is it that Altnet wants the copyright for Fair and Balanced?
We're basically saying that Fox is hardly Fair and Balanced, or the opposite, but we don't want Fox to monopolize that term. Everybody should be able to use Fair and Balanced if they're claim to be Fair and Balanced.
And what is your organization, Altnet?
Altnet is, we get 2 million people a month. You know where Altnet is. Come and see us on the web, www.altnet.org.
But for listeners and viewers who aren't familiar with it, we're also here with Canal Plus, which is the Spanish national network in Spain.
Hola. ¿Qué pasa?
But what is Altnet?
Oh, Altnet is a independent web magazine with lots of stories about culture and politics. We're very progressive. And we get lots of people to come and find out what to do about the news.
Robert Greenwald, do you think Fox has changed since this film has come out? They've also attacked you for not calling Fox to be on Outfoxed.
Yes. Well, what I love about it is they attacked us because we didn't call them when I was making the movie. And, of course, had I called them when they were making, they would have sued to stop us. So we finished the movie. They complained that I didn't ask them for comments. So I said, okay, we're finished. Do you have a comment? And they said, no comment. And then they proceeded. Bill O'Reilly has called me a smear merchant, which I consider a proud honor and an award that I have up on my wall. We haven't seen any real change in Fox's behavior, but we expect over time to, because what we're starting to do is we're affecting the sponsors, and we're seeing an effect in that area, and that's what makes the most concern to Fox News, is sponsors know that Democrats, that liberals buy cars, they buy soap, and they don't want to be identified with just one political point of view. So we're extremely hopeful over time, and with Altnet's lawsuit, that we will see change.
And are you going to continue to distribute? How will you distribute Outfoxed? You have a rather unorthodox method. You don't open first in movie theaters.
Yes. Well, Outfoxed was first available on DVD, then through MoveOn, Center for American Progress, Altnet, and BuzzFlash, it's available to people who want to buy it and have house parties. Now it's also in the theaters. So we're seeing it in the theaters. We're seeing people buy it personally. It was number one on Amazon for over 2 weeks.
What's your response to what happened to your fellow filmmaker at the Republican National Convention opening night? John McCain singles him out. In fact, Michael Moore was there as a correspondent for, a columnist for USA Today, as the entire, as many in the convention hall chanted, 4 more years, Michael Moore putting up the peace sign, or at least the number 2, perhaps meaning 2 more months, not clear. But what about that?
Well, I'm thrilled that the Republicans are focusing on the most serious issue of the day, which is Michael Moore, rather than on terrorism, lack of jobs, lack of education, and this horrible war that's going on.
Robert Greenwald, a director and producer of Outfoxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism, joining thousands. A crowd swelled to thousands of people outside Fox headquarters around 48, 49th, and 6th Avenue yesterday, one of the many direct actions through the day. as people protested Fox News. At the beginning of the protest, as the crowd was swelling, Andrea Buffa, one of the coordinators of the protest, was on the shoulders, sitting on the shoulders of someone so she could be seen. She had a police megaphone to tell people to move from the sidewalk, and as she was giving it back, she continued to chant in the shut-up-a-thon. The police immediately ripped her down off the shoulders of the person who was holding her up, and she, as well as Code Pink's Medea Benjamin, were arrested, were taken away, though ultimately they came back. This is Medea Benjamin explaining what happened.
Cuffed, put into the paddy wagon, driven around the block, then they took all my information and released me and said they would decide whether they would cite me or not.
Cite you for what?
They thought I had illegally used a bullhorn because I was following Andrea Buffa, who had used a bullhorn. But they said that it's their right to sweep up anybody that they want to, whenever they want to, and decide whether they want to arrest them or not.
Why are you here today?
I'm here today because I'm so angry at the way Fox News has misrepresented what's happening in the world, what's the issues about Iraq, and I really want a media that tells the truth so that the American people will be better informed so that we can have a real democracy in this country.
Why are you singling out Fox?
Because Fox has been the worst by far. I turn on Fox and I can't believe we allow those kind of lies to be on the public airwaves. I think a lot of the corporate media is bad, but Fox is by far the worst.
On what issues?
Well, certainly on the issue of the war in Iraq, but basically on every issue. I mean, I am not a Kerry supporter, but the way they've been portraying John Kerry, I find absolutely disgusting. The way they've been laughing about his time in Vietnam, the way they've been making fun of his the issue around his Purple Heart. Again, I don't support Kerry even, but I feel that the way they portray it is just terribly wrong. I would say just about every issue that I have seen Fox News cover, they don't cover it seriously, they don't cover it objectively. I've tried so hard to be on Fox. I was on Bill O'Reilly's show once and couldn't get back on the show because they don't let people like us on. They only let us once so they can make fun of us and laugh at us, but they don't consider us experts. You know, I've been to Iraq four times, Afghanistan twice. I've got advanced degrees in many things, and people like myself should be considered experts. We get to see what the real people see on the ground in places like Iraq and Afghanistan and all over the world, and yet they'd rather talk to the Pentagon people as the experts. So we say, let's have balanced reporting, let's have fair reporting, let's put on some different sides, let's put on people that actually, when they go to a place like Iraq, they don't go embedded with U.S. soldiers, but they go around the streets and they put their lives at risk to talk to the real people.
That was Medea Benjamin, Code Pink. It was about 5-6 o'clock Tuesday afternoon outside Fox headquarters at the Shut-Up-A-Thon. 5 hours later, she was on the floor of the convention about 20 feet from Vice President Dick Cheney and his family. Medea Benjamin there unfurled a banner that said, "Pro-life, stop the killing in Iraq." She was taken away by security as she shouted, "Stop the killing in Iraq. Dick Cheney, how much money did you make in the war today?" This is Democracy Now! When we come back, we look at, well, not only Fox, but the New York Times, and hear from a New York Times columnist himself talking about his own paper. Then we'll be joined by Peter Stone of the National Journal to talk about the money that is going into this election year. He'll also talk about Rudolph Giuliani and about one of the major forces behind the scenes in the Republican Party, Ralph Reed. Stay with us.
It ain't
Bunny Wailer, Get Up, Stand Up, here on Democracy Now!, Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency, The Battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We look at Fox News and also at the New York Times. Interestingly enough, hearing from a New York Times columnist talking about his own paper, Paul Krugman.
Well, on Monday, the Republican delegates approved a new party platform with very little debate. The New York Times reports that for the first time, the platform puts the party firmly on the record against legalized abortion, gay marriage, and other forms of legal recognition for same-sex couples. The gay rights group Human Rights Campaign called the platform one of the, quote, most discriminatory platforms in modern history. On economic issues, the platform calls for the privatization of Social Security and for making President Bush's tax cuts permanent. The same day, economist and New York Times columnist Paul Krugman spoke at an event in New York University about the Bush administration's record.
The point when I realized that there was something really wrong was actually during the 2000 campaign, and it was over the issue of Social Security privatization. Which it actually took me a while. I've expunged from the book some of my early attempts where I was actually desperately trying to find out some way in which this thing made sense, what candidate Bush was saying, and finally realized that it was a scam, pure and simple, that it really was 2 - 1 = 4, that he was saying something that's complete nonsense. It's amazing that if the reports are correct, that on Thursday night he's going to try the whole thing exactly as before. Having run on it, having had his own commission unable to come up with a plan because, you know, the arithmetic just doesn't work, he's nonetheless going to try it once again and say, here's the magic solution that will solve, actually in the case of Social Security, solve a problem that doesn't exist. But anyway, that we're going to create this great plan. It's an amazing thing. It's turned out that's the story all through, that what I saw in Social Security, what I saw on fiscal policy is also the story on science policy, environmental policy, and, of course, in the end, national security and the war. A couple of things to say. One thing that I think is important, and it's not a criticism of Green and Alterman, but it's along the lines, focusing on the gotcha lies is worthwhile, but you shouldn't focus on it too much. Because often the worst things are when they don't literally lie. If you go through the economic statements, you can find, if you want to find a situation where Bush said most of our tax cuts go to people at the middle or the bottom of the economic spectrum, you can find that, but you have to sift through mounds and mounds of Bush statements. Most of the time, what he and his people say are things that convey that impression without actually saying it. So that in last year, and as you can find it again in the campaign materials, last year saying that 92 million Americans will get an average tax cut of $1,000, which conveys the impression, and actually you would find that some pundits actually said, well, every family is going to get $1,000, so that's really good. And of course, the answer, right? It's the people don't know what average means. If Bill Gates walks into a bar, the average net worth of the patrons is a couple of billion dollars. But the point about, and that is, of course, exactly how it works, but the point about that is that when they say something that is deliberately misleading, but not literally, that is misleading, let me say, but not literally false, that actually shows that it's deliberate. That if the extreme care, try to find, I don't think anybody has found a statement in which Bush said that Saddam was responsible for 9/11. But you can find hundreds of elusive sentences where 9/11, Saddam, all are kind of blurred together, which shows that he and his speechwriters knew that it wasn't true and were trying to plant the idea in people's minds. And that's the thing that's worst. It's not the gotcha moment. It's not the smoking gun of the sentence where he says something that's falsifiable. It's the sentences that were clearly, carefully crafted to convince people of something that the administration knew was not true. Bush, we also probably make a mistake if we make too much emphasis on Bush, the individual. I mean, I know that there's a particular thing that can drive you wild, which is the ascription of all of these virtues to a man who manifestly does not possess them. Right? The idea that this guy of all guys is treated as a heroic figure is really baffling. But you know, this really isn't about Bush. Bush is the guy that the movement found to take them over the top. But it didn't start with him, and it won't end with him either. What's going on in this country is that a radical movement, I think we really do, Marcus is entirely right, and radical is the right word, a radical movement that has been building for several decades finally found their moment and their man in Bush. But you shouldn't think of it as just being him. There's a complete continuity between the what's going on now and the campaign of slander and innuendo against Bill Clinton. There's complete continuity going back, really, I think, but this is my next book, you really need to go back to Goldwater. A lot of this has its roots actually in civil rights and the people who don't like them. But you really have to understand that this is not about one guy, it's not even about one dynasty, although that's a story in itself. It's about the coalition between the malefactors of great wealth and the religious right and how they got how they found their man. So don't think of it as just being about this one guy. How can they get away with it? This is one of the biggest stories, I think. And you may want to know what does the Times think about what I write? By and large, they're extremely protective, but they do get antsy when I talk about the media, because they're part of it, because it's sort of... But it's not possible to deny that the media are a very central part of this. Actually, if you can get hold of it, the American Journalism Review has an interview with Warren Strobel and Jonathan Landay, the two Knight Ridder reporters who, during the build-up to the war, were providing by far the best account. I mean, I was going back and saying, why did I know that the case for an active Iraqi nuclear program was being cooked up? Why did I know that this was being sold, that analysts were being pressured? All the stuff that many people still won't admit, but that has been treated as a revelation. I think it was actually because I was reading the Knight Ridder stories, above all. And they say, in talking about it, that the story of media failure here is as important as the story of intelligence failure. It is central to it. A couple of things to say on that. One is, of course, that substantial chunks of the media are part of this same movement. With Robert Greenwald here, we don't need to say much more about that. Yes, Fox News and the Washington Times and all of that are part of it. The rest is very much is very difficult. Most of the media, I'm not sure if that's still true. I've been watching the sad decline of CNN, but anyway, most of the media is still trying to be even-handed. Is still mainstream, but they have lost the sense of what it means, what the job of being an even-handed media really is. It's not what they've. It should be. Well, okay. Here's what what people are saying, and we have checked the facts, and here's what the truth is. Instead, it has become. Here's what one side says. Here's what the other side says. We report. You decide. As another one of my. People who've heard me before will know, will recognize lines. But if Bush said that the Earth was flat, the headlines on a lot of the mainstream media stories would be Shape of the Earth. Views differ. And I saw that I saw that in 2000 over Social Security. I couldn't believe it was happening, that I could not get anyone at my organization or any other to write a straight story saying, what does it take to privatize Social Security? It was always, here's what Bush says, here's what the other side says, and you know, sounds good. He's promising great stuff. You can find it more recently on employment reports. You can find lots of issues, many, many issues. Swift boats, of course, the most horrible of them. But in this case, the last jobs report was really, really crummy. It was crummy enough so that if you were watching CNBC, which had this at 8:30 in the morning when they had the traders in the Chicago pit, when the number came out, the traders started chanting, Kerry, Kerry, Kerry. But to read all the newspaper stories the next day, it was, well, the Bush people say it's a good number, it's a good report, and the other side said it's a bad report, and you would never have known the difference. All right, what do we do? It's much bigger than Bush. It's a movement, it's been building. The one thing I think you really have to say is that people, can I say on the left, the position formerly known as the center, people like myself, people like myself have been asleep for a long, long time. We didn't take it seriously. We sat through all the Clinton scandals and said, oh, you know, probably funny stuff going on there. Didn't really understand the extent to which this movement was being built, which says I have 1 minute, I believe. In the long run, there has to be the creation of institutions. My great beef with Bill Clinton, who I thought did a terrific job in the office, but he did not build the institutional basis for rolling this thing back. That's in the long run. How are we ever going to get time to do that, given that this onslaught is there and it will come? They're getting rid of one man is not in itself. It's necessary but not sufficient, as we say in the academy. The answer, I think, my great hope now is what we need is an enormous unearthing of the scandals that we know have taken place. We need a mega Watergate that rocks them back for enough time so that we can build a counterweight to this thing. Otherwise, this won't be the country we grew up in.
New York Times columnist Paul Krugman speaking in New York. Not in the Republican National Convention, but the same time that it's been going on. Juan?
Well, some 5,000 Republican delegates and alternates, as well as 15,000 journalists, are in New York City this weekend, and they'll be attending the convention. Corp Watch and Democracy Now! Visited a few of the locations that the official delegations were staying at and tracked down some of the company-sponsored parties. Pratap Chatterjee has this report.
We're standing just outside the Four Seasons Hotel, just off of Fifth Avenue, where many of the pioneers and rangers, George Bush and Dick Cheney's elite fundraisers, who raised $100,000 or more, will be staying for this week. The hotel was kind enough to share with me the dinner menu. For just $70, you can have a three-course meal, ahi tuna, American lamb, and chocolate. Or if you're cheap, you could get a simple salad at $16.
After the delegates checked into the 43 official hotels in the Big Apple on Sunday afternoon, many chose to attend a matinee on or off Broadway. The Republican Party bought 13,373 tickets for shows such as Aida, Phantom of the Opera, and Bombay Dreams. We caught up with Konrad Pogorzelski, a Republican delegate from North Carolina, on his way to the theater.
We're going to see a play right now.
So what play are you going to see, and what else are you going to do in New York this week?
Fiddle Around the Roof and a lot of receptions throughout the week. There's so numerous to tell about. But naturally, the convention starts at 8 and finishes at 11 each night, starting Monday through Thursday.
I hear there's something like 200 parties that are happening. Are you going to check some of them out?
There's probably more than that. It's overwhelming. We got a roster of things going on, and it's a lot of fun. It'll be a lot of fun the next several days.
So what parties are you most looking forward to?
That's a good question. We have a delegation party sponsored by some of the businesses in North Carolina, and we'll be going to those parties, and but a lot of others.
General Motors was the host of an event for House Speaker Dennis Hastert of Illinois on Sunday at the Tavern on the Green, which obligingly redecorated the Central Park restaurant by moving an elephant-shaped bush to greet convention visitors at the front entrance. Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway Company, which stands to make a fortune on free trade with Mexico, has rented out the Central Park Boathouse. Many of the Republicans see no harm in mixing a little business with pleasure. Gary Raucus is a Republican from Illinois.
There's no formal business going on. It's just relationships. Hi, how are you? And good to see you, and that type of thing. So I'm sure there's a few cards that get exchanged here and there, but that's what it's all about, too.
I'm standing in front of the Rockefeller Center on Manhattan's Fifth Avenue, a stone's throw from expensive stores like Cartier and Saks Fifth Avenue. This week, companies ranging from General Motors to Pfizer will be holding private parties here for the Republicans and their supporters, who've anteed up thousands of dollars to re-elect George Bush and Dick Cheney in 2004. For example, on Wednesday, Pfizer will be throwing a party at the Rainbow Room at the Rockefeller Center. And every night, the American Gas Association will be holding a private party at Noches on Broadway.
Perhaps the most controversial location that the companies are renting out to entertain their friends on Capitol Hill is the Metropolitan Museum of Art. We asked some of the local artists near the museum what they thought of the Pepsi party. Clara Soriano is a local potter.
Why would they want a Pepsi company to be sponsor the party inside the museum? I think partially because they want to be favored by the Republicans.
Miguel Medina is a mask maker.
A museum, they're not supposed to be using a museum for that. You know, it's a bunch of artists in the street. They're really looking for a place to show that stuff to the public. They can, you know, appreciate it and see it. And they use museums like this for that. And it made no sense to me.
Barry Vreg is a tourist visiting from the Netherlands.
I don't think it's good. I think it brings an entanglement between really showing the people the ancient Egypt art and politics, which is a really different thing, I think.
But not everybody was opposed to the idea. Cassius King, a member of a group called the Billionaires for Bush, thought it was an excellent plan.
Corporations are people too, and I believe that they have as much a right to party as anybody else. And our man Bush is the best man we can have for corporations because he's done so much for us.
Thurston Howell IV. I live in New York, Paris, Tokyo, the Caymans, and the Grand Bahamas.
What do you think about the fact that PepsiCo has rented part of the Metropolitan Museum of Art to throw a party for the Republicans?
Well, we don't consider it renting, really. I mean, more and more corporations are owning these places. It's the first step towards complete privatization. Soon, it'll be the entire Central Park that'll be corporate-owned, and that'll be a great day.
For Democracy Now! And Corp Watch, I'm Protheb Chatterjee with Jesse Mann, Ting Ting Chen, and Jeff Conant.
And thanks so much, Protheb Chatterjee, and all for that report. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, we'll be joined by Peter Stone talking about 527s, Ralph Reed, and the former mayor of New York, Rudolph Giuliani. Stay with us. The group Billionaires for Bush singing Billionaires for Bush's War. Here on Democracy Now!, breaking with convention. War, peace, and the presidency. The battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez.
We're going to focus on one of the GOP's most successful operatives, Ralph Reed, the former head of the Christian Coalition. The company Reed founded in 1997 is called Century Strategies. It billed itself as one of the nation's leading political and corporate consulting firms. Century Strategies has provided consulting services to Fortune 500 corporations, members of the U.S. House and Senate leadership, numerous governors, and the campaign of President Bush.
In 2003, the Georgia-based firm opened a Washington, D.C. office. The National Journal reported that Century Strategies, quote, is poised to earn handsome fees from the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign and from the Republican National Committee as a key vendor for voter contact and mobilization. Reed's firm received a total of $4.3 million from the RNC and the Bush campaign in 2000 for doing voter calls and direct mail. We're joined now by National Journal reporter Peter Stone. We first saw him at the Democratic Convention, and as usual, he is on the money trail. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you very much.
Peter, before we talk about Ralph Reed and also Rudolph Giuliani and his corporate connections, we wanted to focus on a piece you'd done right before the Democratic Convention and continue to follow, and it's become even more pertinent, and that is the issue of the 527s. Please explain what they are and why they're relevant.
Well, the 527s are outside groups that during this campaign cycle have proliferated. The Democrats really pioneered the development of them. A few Democratic groups have gained national prominence. One is called the Media Fund that was started by Harold Ickes, former Deputy White House Chief of Staff to President Clinton, and a somewhat sister organization called America Coming Together. Together, these two groups to date have raised almost $120 million, and they have two primary functions. One is the Media Fund has been running hard-hitting ads in many battleground states that are focusing on President Bush's record and going after issues that they think will resonate with Democrats and build support for Kerry. They've spent over $25 million so far, well over $25 million in battleground states. And parallel to that is another organization called America Coming Together, which is aimed at doing get-out-the-vote activities, voter mobilization in many of these same battleground states. They got a big leg up, big jump on the Republicans. Republicans, for various reasons, held back, partly because of concerns that these might be in violation of campaign finance laws. That was their allegation early on, that they and they opposed these organizations, and also probably because the Bush campaign was very well funded. One of the main rationales for the Democrats getting in earlier was that they feared that Kerry would be vastly out-fundraised, outspent by President Bush's campaign. As it turns out now, Bush has broken all records for an incumbent, raising over $240 million in hard money, while the Kerry campaign, to many people's surprise, has raised close to $190 million in hard money, making it much more competitive than people suspected it would be. But the Democrats, as I said, feared that this would not be the case, and so outside groups with ties to leading Democrats, Harold Ickes being the most prominent, decided, and Steve Rosenthal, who's very active with, who's sort of the political director of America Coming Together, former political director of the AFL-CIO, were very effective in raising a lot of money. And in Boston, particularly, they decided that it was a great place to be because that's where many of the party's leading donors and fundraisers were.
Now, let me ask you, what permits them to be able to raise unlimited money? How are they able to get around the campaign finance reform?
Well, they're basic. There are a couple of loopholes, but primarily they're allowed to do this, quote, as long as they're independent. As they're independent of the president's campaign and independent of the national party committees. They claim that they are totally independent, not coordinating anything, and hard documentary evidence is, you know, there are a lot of appearances of ties, certainly, on both sides there are appearances of ties. And but as long as they don't coordinate their campaign, they can raise unlimited soft money. The big contributions, the six-figure contributions that were banned in the major campaign finance reforms known as McCain-Feingold. The National Party Committees can no longer do this. in a sense, these groups have come in to fill a vacuum that the National Party Committees used to do, and particularly spend the money in things that the National Party Committees spent it on, which are heavy advertising and get out the vote activities.
Isn't this what the scandal just in the last few weeks was all about in the Republican Party, that the counsel for the Bush-Cheney reelection right. campaign had to resign because he was advising the...
he was also legal counsel to Swift Boat Group.
Right.
And there was certainly an appearance problem with there, too. Both sides have, you know, in some ways pushed the envelope in this effort. Both Ickes and Ginsburg have said that they have legal opinions supporting them, and what they're doing is absolutely fine under the new law. And they're being very careful. And I'm sure they are being very careful. But the appearance problem and the whole ambiguity of the new law has created a lot of confusion and a cloud over these groups.
And the essence, again, of the groups is that they cannot have advertisements supporting a particular candidate, but they can obviously criticize.
They can't say vote for or vote against. They can focus on issues. They're supposed to focus on issues and that are obviously heavily identified with candidate, you know, Bush and Cheney, Bush or Kerry on the other side.
Now, Karl Rove...
Go after their record. They go after the record of their opponent, but they don't go to the next stage, vote for.
The top advisor for George Bush, Karl Rove, right. just granted a rare interview to John King of CNN, mm-hmm. where he said he thinks 527 should be abolished. And right. George Bush has also been not wanted to attack the speedboat ads, the Speedboat Veterans for Truth ads directly without just overall saying mm-hmm. all the 527 should be gotten rid of.
Right. Well, this seems like a good tactic for the Bush campaign to take and for the president to take. It's easier to advocate, complete abolition of the 527s. And they have a good ally, certainly, in Senator McCain, who has been, you know, probably the leading champion of campaign finance reform and who has early on voiced strong concerns in opposition to these 527s. It was obviously interesting that when McCain came out particularly against the Swift Boat ads and was very critical of them and perhaps urged the president to, you know, speak out against them, Bush decided to respond by saying, let's get rid of all the 527s. So that's where we are on that issue right now.
But the Federal Elections Commission has, in essence, said that it's not going to make a ruling in this election cycle.
It's unlikely the FEC will act before this election season, yes.
And now the Republicans have begun to develop their own 527s.
Well, the 527s had been percolating on the Republican side for some time. They'd held back, partly because, you know, again, the Bush campaign was very well financed, also because of concerns that they were unnecessary and illegal. And they charged they were illegal. But now, with the Democrats having such an advantage on this area, they've decided to mount, you know, a significant effort. Whether they can catch the Democratic groups at this point, you know, is anybody's guess. But they have had apparently some real success in the last month or two. And the leading group there is called Progress for America Voter Fund. That group actually got going in another group related to Progress for America actually got going about a year ago. They did some early spade work in terms of fundraising last year, put together a board of well-connected Republicans, and actually held some briefings in Washington with potential donors late last year that were informational briefings about the new campaign finance law and about issues that drew the likes of Ed Gillespie, the chairman of the RNC, and Ken Melman, the chairman of the Bush campaign. This group early on was seen as one that had the kind of imprimatur, the blessings of the GOP, and gave it a leg up. But serious fundraising apparently didn't get going until the last couple of months. Now they claim they've raised and have commitments for about $35 million. In recent weeks, they've started running ads in key battleground states. There are another set of ads, I believe, they're starting either later this week or next in more battleground states. And they're talking about staying on the air up until the election.
One of the largest media executives, Gerald Perenchio, CEO of Univision, the Spanish language network, was one of the major funders of this 527.
He's given a seven-figure donation. I think even larger donations have come from Alex Spanos, a longtime soft money. Many of the people now support supporting these groups had in the past been soft money donors to either the GOP or the Democrats. And as I was about to say, that they're active here in New York this week, much as Ickes and Rosenthal and Ellen Malcolm, head of Emily's List, who's also affiliated with the Democratic groups, had a strong presence in Boston, centrally located in hotels where leading Democratic donors were staying so that they would have easy access to them. Progress for America has taken their cues from Harold Ickes, of all people, and has set up shop in the Ritz-Carlton in New York, where, lo and behold, many of the GOP's leading donors are staying.
Peter Stone, we only have a few minutes, and we want to get to two other issues.
Sure.
Very quickly, to Rudolph Giuliani, who gave the keynote on the first night of the Republican National Convention last night, sitting together with Vice President Dick Cheney. You've been on the money trail, looking at what Rudolph Giuliani is doing behind the scenes at this convention.
Well, Giuliani is both engaged in some fundraising to help members of Congress. His PAC has recently been revived, and he's raising money. He had a fundraiser this week that will help congressional candidates this fall. He also did a fundraiser for John Thune, Senate candidate in South Dakota, certainly one of the most important races for the GOP this year. These efforts, coupled with many things that Giuliani is doing, mostly to support the Bush campaign this week, are seen as, you know, he's seen as one of Bush's leading allies at this point, very important ally in terms of moderates, also a very important ally even more in terms of making the case, as he tried to do the other night, about Bush's effective leadership in the war on terrorism and the importance of continuing that leadership for another 4 years. This week, Giuliani has been seeing many state delegations, also doing visits to groups that are important for potential candidates down the road, such as AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, farm state delegations, and some analysts who watch Giuliani think, you know, this could be a harbinger to a run in 2008.
Peter Stone, since we only have a minute and a half, we want to get a thumbnail sketch of one major force in the Republican Party, Ralph Reed.
Well, Ralph Reed is also here in New York this week and obviously has been a major force for the Bush campaign this year. He did play a role in 2000 in the campaign with some important responsibilities, but this year his role has been significantly elevated. He's in Southeast Regional Coordinator for the campaign, in charge of five states. Most important far and away is Florida. He has also been an advisor to Ken Mellman, close friend and trusted advisor, on various issues, including outreach to social conservatives, religious conservatives, and Reed is also seen as a good fundraiser for the Bush campaign. He was a ranger, raised over $200,000, and Mellman told me in an interview 5 or 6 weeks ago that he basically is one of the key people he turns to on many issues.
We're going to have to do part two with you tomorrow on Ralph Reed, because he is a key force. But right now, as we wrap up the show, we want to thank Peter Stone of the National Journal with this bit of breaking news. As we talk about those who have, we end with those who have not. They're billing it as the world's largest unemployment line. This morning, just minutes as the program was going to air, thousands of unemployed workers gathered in the streets of New York in symbolic protest. They gathered along Broadway in single file lines stretching some 3 miles from Wall Street to 31st Street, just shy of Madison Square Garden, site of the Republican National Convention. Each participant held aloft a pink slip of paper warning, quote, "the next pink slip might be yours." We'll have more on the story tomorrow, as well as planned mass labor march to be held this evening at 6 o'clock. That does it for the show. I'll be in Asheville, North Carolina on Friday and in Harrisonburg, Virginia on Saturday. There's a lot of people to thank. Prothap Chatterjee, Jeremy Scahill, Mike Burke, Shuf Abdelkaddous, Anna Nogueira, Elizabeth Press, John Hamilton, Mike DeFilippo, and so many others, and we'll be Julia Dangle. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.